stories don't define you. How you tell them will. Hi, I'm Sarah Elkins, your host and chief story maker of Elkins Consulting.
When we share stories, whether in our personal or business lives, how we share them makes a difference in how we remember them and in how we're perceived by the people we're sharing them with. When you're listening to this podcast, I encourage you to listen and consider your own related stories. To listen and think about which stories in your life might have impacted you in a similar way. And think about how you share those stories and the messages they carry for you and for the people who are hearing them.
Hey, I am grateful to be introducing my podcast guest, Carrion Fournier. And she's up in New York, and we were introduced by Tara Rae Bradford. So the first thing I want to ask you, Carrion, is why Tara Rae? I mean, how did that happen?
Yeah, you know what? I think as anyone's in the entrepreneurial space, I mean, certainly in larger organizations, but I think it's even more prevalent. When you're working with small companies and solopreneurs, it's not just what they do, but it's who they are, right? That you have similar energy and mindsets and the ability. It sounds cliche. Once again, I come from corporate. When you hear trusted advisor, it sounds very formal. But when you're in a smaller, I mean, really having that sort of informal advisory council that you can just pick up the phone and saying, I'm flying blind. What do I do? Because when you're an entrepreneur, you're doing everything and many times outside of what you did for many years. So it's important to have that sort of advisor of experts that you really like, know, and trust.
Right. And you develop those if you are, I guess if you're intentional about it, you can really develop those relationships long before you need them. And I think that's important.
So absolutely. Yeah, I think I met Tara 6-7 months before I actually really, it was a very slow relationship, but like, let's just very authentic, natural build to them. When we said, okay, let's work together, it just became obvious why.
Oh, I love that. So you were, before I hit record, you said something about, you know, being an entrepreneur and you had certain aspects designed for your business, but you hadn't thought about other aspects. Can you tell me just a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, listen, I think when people go into their own business, be clear about what you're good at, like what you come to the table with, what kind of expertise and skill sets and competencies. And then I think sometimes people lump them together, but what are you just inexperienced in doing, but have potential to be good at? And what are some of the things you're just, to be frank, not really very good at? And so for me, I came to entrepreneurship in my own business knowing I was very good at strategy, very good at communications and analytics, and really the content part of the delivery, like what we're delivering to our clients. And even on the coaching side, deeply expert in that. But running a business isn't just doing a business. It's also selling and brand and marketing and all the administration. So the aspects that were really new to me was that content marketing and brand, was prospecting and selling, and all of the administrative infrastructure. So, you know, eating my own cooking, I really looked at that other stuff and I said, listen, no matter how, I never want to get great personally, and nor will I ever enjoy all the administration. There are some people that are rock stars at them. God bless. It is not how I'm wired. I'm a detail person because I think execution excellence is predicated on knowing the details. So I'm not just pie in the sky, but I don't want to necessarily be in that all days of the week. But the area that I realized I really wasn't very experienced in, but I thought there was potential for me to really grow and develop and perhaps develop some real capability and competency, was on the marketing brand sales side. And it was the part that probably terrified me the most when I launched. And it's a fine line at times. It still terrifies me, but I'm also having a great time. Mm-hmm. I'm really enjoying what I'm learning. I'm enjoying even some of the mistakes I'm making. I realize, it was well-intended, didn't really come out the way I thought. Got it. Okay, now I know more. So that whole process has been fascinating for me. And, you know, I'm sort of kicking myself because I always talk to my own clients about limiting their definition of what they're capable of and who they are. And for so many years, I said, well, I'm not a salesperson. I'm not marketing. That's them. I'm the this.
Right.
And now I'm thinking, what was I thinking? Of course, it's just a different application of what I already enjoy doing. So it's been a really fun journey.
Wonderful. So one of the questions that I am really curious about is, first of all, when you think about that first aha moment that you needed help, like you said that you were in a coaching program with Tara Bradford, is that right?
Yeah, I was it was more of an exploratory, it was less business related. It was just sort of, I was kind of curious about just gaining more information. It was more of a place of curiosity versus need on some different modalities. But once again, just temperament and energy-wise style, we just clicked very well. Mm-hmm. There are other things that, you literally sign up for because, there's a gap and I need to fill it. And for me, I always talk to my own clients and I try and once again, listen to my own advice. Transformation mm-hmm. comes from filling in the gap of what you don't know.
Right. I love the idea of thinking about how you would coach somebody else that is struggling with certain concepts. So for instance, I was struggling with finishing my book last year, just like could not keep myself accountable. And I'm looking at my top strengths. I'm like, okay, if I was working with somebody with those strengths, what would I recommend? How would I advise them? How would I coach them to use their strengths to accomplish that goal? And it changed everything in how I structured my days. So I'm not a routine person. I have adaptability in my top strengths.
Yep.
And everything I read about writing a book was develop a routine, develop habits around it, have a set amount of time, break out large chunks of time that are set aside for this. I'm like, I don't do anything for large chunks of time.
Yep.
I mean, really, 15, 20 minutes is my maximum.
And you know what? Large is relative, right? So for you, large chunk
might be 20 minutes instead of 15.
Right. It's just on the other side of your comfort zone. Right? So somebody else were an hour mm-hmm. sitting there writing might have been, going to an hour and a half, 2 hours might have been the stretch assignment.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Just a stretch. Exactly. And it was fascinating to me that my aha moment came when I was sitting in a laundromat. So we have an Airbnb property with three beds in it. And it's actually two and a pullout, but we had guests use all three beds. And so I brought all of the whites because we do all our laundry in whites. So we can bleach the heck out of it. Yep. And brought it all to the laundromat so I could wash it all in just a couple loads. So I wouldn't have to wait for things to turn over. And I'm sitting in the laundromat and I open up my laptop to write my book. And at this point I was held accountable because I had already pre-sold over 200 copies of the book. So I had to finish writing it.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the accountability.
So. That's a nice driver.
Yeah. It was a big accountability, which was another part of coaching myself. Like, how am I going to keep myself accountable? And so I'm sitting in the laundromat and I'm writing my book and there was a section about, how you kind of identify what you're really good at. How do you find your what in mm-hmm. relation to your why? And I'm kind of going through this and writing it up. And then it dawned on me. I remember the moment because it was like the light bulb came on. Sometimes you see that little dimmer switch slowly coming on. This was the full on light bulb.
Right.
Oh, how would I coach myself to get this done? Because we all know, regardless of your strengths, you can get from point A to point B, but how you're going to do it is going to look different.
Right.
So,
it's interesting. I love that you bring up strengths because there's an exercise I do with a bunch of my clients. Oftentimes, and I know I've been guilty of this, we become so attached and our ego is so satiated by saying, these are my strengths, that it can boomerang and it can be a limiting belief. So I'll give mm-hmm. a perfect example. A number of years ago when I did this exercise, I've always been really proud that I'm independent. I'm an independent woman. I've been independent since very young, economically, in every other way. You know what? At some point, if you overweight that muscle, you limit what's possible. And at times, it's important to be able to depend on others, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not that strength isn't still a strength and has an important place to play. But when it comes from sort of your default being versus a place of intentional choice, there's so many other things can be unlocked when you say, well, what else would be possible if I chose something else? Is there more something else that would better serve me? Now that I was really proud, this sounds so conceited, but I used to be very proud that I was smart, you know, theater background that made it on Wall Street. Okay, great, pride. And I realized it had cut off my ability to like listen to my heart and my intuition because it was so counter to, well, I'm analytical and I'm this. That's not serving me, right? So when you really test those strengths and you say, okay, what else is possible? I would be curious to see if there's something else that might open up for you if you sort of said,
right. And that's kind of how I look at it is, I think we're kind of saying the same thing that sometimes your strengths can really get in your way.
Yeah.
But in strengths language, it's when I was trained, it was the balcony in the basement of your strengths when it's not benefiting you, when you're using it badly, I guess. Mm-hmm. And command is my number four strength. And boy, did that get me into trouble, especially when I worked with the public sector.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw myself as somebody who just gets things done because I guide people. I'm like, okay, this needs to be done. This is how we're going to do it. And I always prided myself on that. And then I realized, okay, that's kind of getting in my way a little bit because people, especially in coaching, because people need to come up with their own answers.
Yes.
So when was the time when you realized that that whole I'm independent kind of was getting in your way? What was the specific instance where you had to either ask or accept help that you didn't ask for?
Right. Well, I think the universe did this for me.
It usually does.
Yeah. The universe really loves to. So I had, to go a little personal. When I was 20, I had what I call Trinity of Trauma. Like really bad, intensive things happen. My twin brother suddenly passed away. My mom had a mental fracture. I was the recipient of the end of it and a violent hashtag Me Too incident, let's call it that. And it sent me into a very masculine, for my survival, understandably now, I went into very masculine energy, very hard driving, independent, tough, all of this kind of stuff, which on the outside, I think people would have thought, by the time this all didn't work for me, it was working for me. I had all the trappings of success on the outside, the big job, the big career, the big compensation, the big office, the big ego. Yes. I joke all the time. I was the one making fun of people in the self-help aisle 10 years ago. Come a long way. And then my second trinity of trauma in my mid-40s, so about, 7, 8 years ago, I got really ill and I was at the top of my game in the corporate world. And I went from working 80 to 100 hours a week to not being able to get up a flight of stairs. And while I was went on disability, it took them about 9 months to figure out I had advanced Lyme disease very badly that manifested in my pulmonary and endocrine system. While I was on disability, the CEO of Marsh McLennan left. And there was a new CEO who I like and admire, but he's more of a cut yourself to greatness kind of guy at the time. And so I got laid off. And while I'm ill, and that was before I knew what it was, and then a couple of months later, I filed for divorce after 20 years because some other things became apparent. And so my second trinity of trauma really hit me hard. And I remember laying in bed, looking at the ceiling, and knowing in my gut that all of the tools and techniques that had made me wildly successful on the outside was going to put me in my grave. It was just not going to do it. And it was so clear. I had a 7-year-old daughter, almost 8 at the time. And I had to figure out a new way. And so things that, to be frank, I probably wouldn't have necessarily entertained, I had nothing else to lose. And so I became a seeker. I had a friend, retired tech CEO who'd been trying to get me to do Landmark for a number of years. I'd pushed and I said, oh, that's so not me. I'm not getting in front of 250 strangers emoting. Like, are you kidding me? I went. It was absolutely transformational for me. Didn't love some of their sales model and process and some of that other stuff. But if you put that to the side and just the fundamentals of how they help you really rethink some of these internal narratives, that really accelerated my growth. Lots of reading Brené Brown and Wayne Dyer and Simon. I mean, just on. And you just start absorbing this other way of being, right? So I think that's when I really started to infuse more traditional feminine energy, not just female energy, but feminine energy, where you really focus on not just the doing, but the being. And it's, I think that was really where it forced me to challenge these narratives I've been telling myself, that there was like only one way I could interact in the universe, only one path for me to be successful. And then to be frank, my daughter is the one I joke all the time. She's my life coach from heaven. Like she just calls me on the carpet unequivocally when I am not in alignment to who I'm meant to be. Like she just, absolutely. It's pretty funny actually.
Yeah. My younger son does that for me. I totally understand that. And now that he's 19, he just turned 19 on Sunday. That's why it's hard for me. my baby just turned 19 on Sunday. And, he does that for me. He'll just totally call me on it, but I call him on stuff in a way that I can't call anyone else on it because he gets it. And it's kind of magical, that relationship that you can have in that. So I'm curious, when you're laying in bed and you had that aha moment, I don't believe the light switch just goes on from off. I really believe in a dimmer switch. We just don't necessarily know what's coming on. We can't necessarily see that dim light starting to shine from the low point and coming to that high point. But I'm imagining you laying in bed basically without being able to move because the Lyme disease was attacking your thyroid and your pulmonary system. So your blood pressure must have been severely low.
Yes.
And I'm imagining you laying in bed and kind of hitting that. What I just took a course from Grace Lover. She calls it the ice cream on the kitchen floor moment, which is, and then she describes it as you're sitting on the floor with the tub of ice cream and a spoon and eating and crying. And we've all been in some version of that. Mine was sitting in my car and bawling my eyes out, which is very unusual for me. I get a headache every time I cry. So I generally don't cry much. It's not worth the headache. But I can imagine that's your ice cream on the floor moment, as Grace Lever says. And what was it, do you think? Was it something? Did your daughter walk in? Was it that a thought of this isn't working, but I have to make something work? I mean, what do you think it was that kind of got you to that, the dimmer switch starting to come back on?
Yeah, I mean, all my daughter. Like, I did not have, you know, I don't really have any other family. My dad's alive, but, you know, I don't have any aunts, uncles. Like, it's just kind of all on me, and it has been for a long time. And, you know, I was the breadwinner in the family, so it was all financially on me, pretty much still is. And like knowing I had to do this for her. You know, I'm very, you know, people have different definitions of what parenthood is. And for me, it's always been, I was here to help steward her growth and her self-evolution. And I knew that the other adults in her life, although her father loves her and other things, wasn't capable, well-intended, of doing that for her, this beautiful soul. And I knew I had to, I just had to figure it out for her.
You had to model it, right?
I had to. And, you know, I've been very clear even since then. It's never linear. It's not like you have this epiphany and, rainbows and, you know, unicorn. But I have to say that there's been a lot of ups and downs along the way, and I've been very authentic with her to show her when things also go off, right? And it's okay. It's okay that they go off, and it's okay to feel badly. You know, the shadow side is as important as the light, so that when she hits these times, you know, she doesn't think that's the brick wall, you know? And I've been very transparent with her. There have been a number of times in my life where you feel like you just hit, if not the brick wall, like the just cement metal wall. And it's the universe picking you up and saying, no, you need to go here. Right. And so I think the benefit of being in
the obstacle is the path.
Yeah. You know, and the benefit of being in my 50s is you do have this hindsight. And I can, you know, when I hit these times now, I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, why is this happening? This isn't what I planned. And I go back and I look, I'm like, wait a second. Let's just open up possibility here, because every other time in my life that something like this has happened, a perfect storm of crap or unintended consequences, it is always meant to serve me. The universe is always in my service, even when I have to go through pain. And that's not meant to be some sort of crazy platitude. It's just through my experience. And so, you know, trying to, And listen, it's not always easy. There's not always days. Like, let's talk about like COVID. I was 18 months in launching my own company. I was getting used to and getting my pipeline filled and getting what this prospecting and sales thing was. And yeah, it was rocking and rolling. And then boom, I mean, just boom. And I'm like, I took a day or two feeling sorry for myself. And then, you know, to get me out of that, for me, it's being of service. How do I help? And then it's, okay, what opens up? What else is possible? What is something that I wouldn't have even considered had this not happened? Exactly. And, you know, so like I said, I'm very transparent with my daughter about that process.
Mm-hmm. Can we go back to the laying in bed and who was it? Because this was in the context of independence getting in the way, because I was like that too. Like, even when I was 19, I was dating this Australian guy and he came to visit me and I went to get gas and he goes, "I'll pump that for you." I was like, "No, I got it."
Oh yeah. Like,
why not let him pump the damn gas?
And right. What do I have to prove? Why do I have this chip on my shoulder?
Right. So do you remember what it was where somebody helped you and you're like, "Oh, that really wasn't a horrible thing to get out."
This was a slow burn. I'm getting more comfortable now. This is not, and I'm really good at depending. People depend. But I will tell you actually where there was a big shift. So amongst this perfect storm of crap I was dealing with, and I still had to live in the house with my ex-husband as we were going through a divorce, I blew out my ACL. So I couldn't drive.
No.
I couldn't drive. It was like that scene from Misery where at some point it just gets
hobbled.
You're just like, you can't, it's just, and I'm stuck in the house with this, you know, crazy guy at the time. And I'm like, and so then it just got funny. And I couldn't get to physical therapy because I lived like half an hour away from where the physical therapist was. We were like kind of far out. I had to ask for help. He was not helping or he was making it worse. Had no family. I had, you know, around. So I'm like, who do I ask? And one day the physical therapist offered to drive me home after my session. I'm like, "Oh, you can't possibly." He's like, "Of course I can." And I realize I love helping people. Why am I robbing the joy of other people helping me? Because
exactly.
They're like, they were so like, "Oh yeah, no, like some of my neighbors, what can we do? We'll go grocery shopping." So that was a year of a really bad snowstorm. And my car would get snowed in and I had my whole brace and everything else. And my ex, he'd shovel out his side of the driveway and not mine. And we had like 2 feet of snow. My neighbors would come over with their, you know, thing and they'd, and I'd feel so apologetic. They're like, "Got it. We got it. We got you, girl." Yeah. No, you know, yeah. And it was really that, you know, helping brings joy. Right. And exactly. As long as you're not one of these people manipulating or using or over-exercising that, you know, that's what binds us, right? And I think my friendships, I think, have gotten the ones that have stood the test of time. The more vulnerable I was able to make myself and allow in, I think the relationships have really gotten strong. Like, I used to define like this independence, dependence, sort of tangentially. I used to say I had really high walls around me and almost no boundaries on the other side of those walls. So I kept a lot of people out and at arm's length. But if they happened to get on that other side of the wall somehow, they could walk all over me. And I was just like awful.
I think now, that's not uncommon.
Now I spend a lot. I really try and not get triggered. I keep my walls down, but I'm incredibly clear about my boundaries.
Yeah, I think that's, honestly, I think that's something we start to learn in our 40s.
Yeah.
I know there are people who learn it earlier. But I know that all the women I know and the book that, Chris Mack.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to start over for a second. Neil, can you cut that out, please? That's my editor and one of my closest friends. Anyway. So it reminds me of that book by Chris Mack, No Approval Needed, hashtag No Approval Needed. She interviewed women from all over the world who were in their 40s. And that was such a common theme that I started to understand my boundaries. I started to understand when help was necessary and important. And I'm reminded of when my husband broke his leg and I had to get him and our two boys and our dogs off the mountain. We were 2 miles up from the trailhead and I had to enlist help from people. And it was for me, but it was easier because it was really for my husband because he was the one with the broken leg. but we managed to get back into town. And then, and he had lost his job. He had contract work. So financially, mm-hmm. we were in okay position, but he had lost his job. And thank God, they had negotiated keeping his health insurance, our family health insurance, summer. Lost his job and then promptly broke his leg and had to have surgery, a plate and 8 screws later. And I will never forget hitting this point where I was just beside myself trying to take care of this 1890 Victorian home inside and outside because it's summer. And two little boys, they were, what, 3 and 5 or 4 and 6?
Oh, wow.
Like that. We had 2 dogs at the time, a 3-year-old puppy and a 12-year-old dog. Yeah. And I was working a little. I had started my own business, but mostly it wasn't. But my husband was laid up. I mean, he could do nothing.
Yeah.
And he had to work. I mean, he had to, luckily, you know, a laptop goes a long way. But I'll never forget this moment where I'm at my wit's end. I'm on the floor in the kitchen with my ice cream tub and my spoon. Thank you, Grace, forever. That will be in my head. But I was just about to tell my husband that I'd hit my limit. I'm just about to burst in a headache. And I hear this lawnmower. And I look out our windows of our bay windows, and one of my neighbors is just mowing our lawn.
Oh, that's so amazing.
He didn't ask. No one asked if they could help. They just did it.
Yeah.
And one of my neighbors came over with her daughter, the same age as our older son, and said, "Hey, I'm taking the boys over to Memorial Park to go swimming. Where are their swim trunks?" I mean, she that's walked amazing. In our door and did that. And yeah, and that was my moment. It wasn't a slow burn for me. It was really that moment where I realized they want to help. It makes them feel good.
Yeah.
And I need their help. And if I don't have to ask, even better.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd say that more like light switch on, that was my ACL. As far as it really being more part of my internal like mechanism, it's taken some time. I'll be honest, my current relationship has done wonders, right? Done wonders for me, really believing that it's just my being, not my doing, that is what is worthy in the relationship. I'm going to get all emotional. But it's the first time, 51 years, and it's the first time I truly get that. Really,
so tell me about that moment. Like when I'm sure it was either maybe 3 weeks into dating him, or what was it that you went, oh.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. So we joke, we've been together 8 months, and although we joke with COVID months, like dog years, it's like a year and a half. Like kind of more like a year and a half. And so I spend about half the time because, you know, when I don't have my daughter, like we have joint custody, so I'm pretty much with him. So it's really been a journey because the first part of our relationship was the classic whining, dining. You know, it's very successful media exec. You know, I had done that before. We had all that. I'd never been really like, I was always the breadwinner, the successful one. Even in other dating situations, I kind of realized I was slightly, it wasn't 100%. Then I went like 70-40, but I never really had this dynamic. And so it was just sort of the old fashioned, you know, get courted thing. And then, you know, you really settle into this COVID where you're just dealing with so much stuff, you know, the stress of my only surviving relative, my 81-year-old father, and keeping him healthy, and the risk to myself because of my own medical history, and what happens with the business, and, you know, everything just felt like a mess, and oh my God, you know, everything. And then, you know, that's okay. Like, you know, not having to feel like I was worthy by having my act together and being in action and having all my balls in the air. Like I could literally drop all of the balls, all the plates, and still be lovable and worthy of a really great relationship. Like that.
And he'd have to sweep them up.
Yeah. Yeah. He actually does. He's like, it's more like, he's like, listen, in my house, I take care of all the balls. You don't worry about it. No. And I'm like, yeah, it's really, and once again, done from a place of care and love, not control. So
that's a totally different distinction. That's an important
totally distinction. Different, right? And so, and you know, one thing I will say, which is interesting, and I learned when I was I would say the dark side of the sort of where it could go wrong. I wouldn't say go wrong, or maybe like once again, the tone and temperament makes a difference. when I was always so alpha and so in control, here I am coming out of my divorce and my illness and trying to find employment. For the first time in my life, and I guess a little bit, I attracted someone who really loved to be the savior. Because I was like really not in my game, right? So somebody came in, probably should have been the rebound person, lasted longer than it should have. And I realized as soon as I started getting back to my more, you know, full vibrancy self, it didn't really work. You know, I was like, well, that's not kind of what I signed up for. I wanted the help, like coming in as the strong male, that, you know, I'm like, yeah, that's great. Right. Like, I love this. But once again, that's more of a power thing than really a partnership piece. Mm-hmm. And so that was a different type of depending. So that was a really interesting lesson, because I think at the time, having always handled something, that person coming in and saying, you know, I'll help you, little lady, that was sort of a revelation, but it was not really done. It wasn't really in the most healthy way, but it was a good taste. Like, it, for me, it was the entryway into knowing some other way of interacting.
I always say that sometimes it's better to know your deal breakers than to have a laundry list of wish lists.
Oh yes, absolutely. And listen, you know, for good or for bad, like, you got to handle me, like all of me. Like, and if that's, I'm not toning myself down, you know, it's what you see is what you get.
And what you were experiencing was building that deal breaker list, and that turning point of having somebody come and show up to help you, that allowed you that next potential deal breaker, which was, I want to be helped, but I don't want to be rescued.
Right. Exactly.
You know, having that delineation there that you didn't necessarily know existed until you had that experience.
Yeah. First it was care and attention, which was new and a revelation. And then, okay, well, there's two sides of this coin. Who knew, right? Now I realize, you know. But the wonderful part is when we're all learning, right? It's all about,
of course,
you know, questioning, challenging, always positive outcomes from it. But yeah, and I'm not even going to lie. You know, here I do this for a living. I still have to work on my natural wiring that says, if I'm not doing and contributing, where's my worth? Like, I have to really meditate on it, challenge my, when I feel like that's coming up for me, reframe it. You know, I've been living with it for a long time, so it's not something that just kind of goes poof, goes away, but because I'm coming at it with so much more intention, the ability to welcome that into my life is something that I can at least orchestrate.
Well, Carrie-Anne, that's part of what makes you a good coach. I truly believe that if you can't relate to what somebody else is going through in that context of forever fighting a natural instinct that was built from your youth or from patterns in your life, we're all going to be fighting that for our whole lives. And Absolutely. The reality is that if we can't acknowledge that in ourselves, how are we going to help other people? We can't give them a magic bullet to stop their messaging. And so we have to acknowledge that we are still, it's kind of like an alcoholic says that I'm a recovering alcoholic for the rest of your life. You could be a recovering alcoholic for 40 years.
Yeah.
And that's that same acknowledgement. Well, yeah, because I had this pattern for 40 years of my life.
Yeah.
It's not going to just go away, but
it's almost like the frame of a car that's always pulling you right. You've always got it slightly course corrected. It's not driving you off the road, but there's sort of this undercurrent pull that you have to be
that's
aware
a great
of. And adjust,
visual.
Right? No, I talk to my clients about that because you just intention. I go, sometimes you're on a road and it's clear and, you know, but you hit a bump and your axle and you start pulling to the right again. It's okay. Just become self-aware and kind of get you back on track and go to the mechanic, i.e. me, to help for a tune-up.
I love that. Oh my gosh. That is such a great visual. That is such a great visual. My friend Kevin Strauss talks about the four wheels of health. And it's physical, emotional, spiritual, and mental. Yep. And he says, if one tire is a little bit flat or a lot flat, the other three aren't going to drive right.
Yeah, and it's going to pull you off. Absolutely.
And that's a great concept to think about in terms of your, for lack of a better word, your baggage.
Yeah.
if you hit a bump, sometimes that baggage slides to one side and weighs the car down a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's kind of like a little, you know.
Oh, okay.
And once again, sometimes, and like, listen, it's normal to get frustrated. Why am I all of a sudden? But then you realize, okay, tire's flat, you know?
Something
I could do about it, right? And that's where also where we feel empowered. It's not just something I've got to live with and drive. There's something, I can pull over to the side and fill up the tire. Like, you know, power comes back when you realize it's not something you just have to be saddled with or angry about. You know, that's where we take our power back.
Oh, I just love that analogy. I have this because I love cars and I used to work on my car when I was a kid. I had a VW Bug.
Oh, cool. I love those.
Yeah. And I learned how to bleed my brakes and change my oil. And I even replaced the whole pedal assembly one time. And
wow.
Yeah. And there's actually a whole story in my book about demonstrating that I knew about my car. And, so that particular analogy, and then there's an analogy at the end of my book about getting stuck behind a semi on a highway.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You can't pass it. And so your analogy just fits so perfectly. It's such a compliment to how I visualize it. And even I'll come back a little bit, this 8-month relationship during these circumstances is kind of like taking a long road trip together because you're stuck in this car for hours and hours with somebody you didn't know very well when you started out. And then you have to address all kinds of unpredictable things that happen when you're on the road, a flat tire, food poisoning.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of things that happen when you're on the road. So
absolutely.
I love that you get to kind of do this trial by fire in this relationship and that you're still seeing this potential for learning and growth in there. That's just,
yeah. I mean, that's the fun part. And that it's someone that's willing to grow too. And to say, okay, we know this is different than everything we've had, but we're committed to exploring. You know, I love every time we say, and he's like, you know, I never would have said that before. I would have never admitted that, or I would have just, you know, simmered, you know, but he feels safe that he could talk about it without getting attacked. Or I'll be like, you know, I would have never cried in front of someone that I'm with and been like shown that I was worried about X, Y, and Z. That would have never happened. Oh, okay. We both didn't implode with the, you know.
The relationship
good to
didn't
know.
End in a fiery ball.
Exactly. So, it's been a real, you know, gift in all of this, certainly, you know, it really puts to the test the fabric of how somebody is really made.
How old is your daughter now?
15. My hashtag future is female 15-year-old.
Okay. I'm just thinking about what kind of modeling you're doing for her, both in the relationship you ended because it was becoming too dependent and an uneven structure. And then getting into a relationship where you're learning, growing together, and you're finding a better complement. I won't call it balance because I don't really believe in balance, but I do believe in complementary relationships. And it sounds like you're modeling this for your daughter. Has she said anything?
She's never at a loss for an opinion. So she came kind of out of the womb that way. I take no credit. So I'll tell you, when I told her I broke up with my ex-boyfriend, Glenn, who I'd been with for 4 years after my marriage dissolved, and I stayed with it because I thought I didn't want to disrupt her again after the divorce and our families had intermingled. And I told her, and we're sitting on my bed, I think it was right before she turned 13. And I said, you know, and I never, there's been some economic issues where I got taken advantage of again. And I go, listen, but I never judge someone by how much money they make. It's about their humanity. And she goes, listen, Ma, the next guy, not only is he going to be able to take care of himself, he's going to be able to take care of you. And I go, sweetheart, Mommy does not need a man to take care of her. And she goes, I know, Mommy, I know you don't need it, but you deserve it. She goes, you're still awesome.
That's what you want in your life.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, she's like, you deserve it. Of course you don't need it, but like, yeah, you know, so she sees that she's thrilled. She's really, you know, and once again, like just seeing someone who really treats her mom in the right way and not because I need it, but because I deserve it in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't, like, she's just like, I could spend our entire time together telling you these funny little vignettes of her. But one I have to share with my listeners is when, you know, the angels come down. I'm not even that religious. And so I was really at a fork in the road about whether I stayed in corporate or what I was going to do. And she just kind of went out of nowhere. She goes, "Mom, what are you doing?" I'd been in a job that really wasn't that challenging, but I wanted to make sure she was okay after the illness and divorce. It was close to her school. She goes, "You're not you." She just turned 13. She goes, "What's going on?" She goes, "You're not inspired. You're not like driving. You don't look excited about work. Like, come on, what's going on?" And I'm like, and so I have all this settling language. It's good. It's fine. It's good enough. I like my team. They're very nice people. And I had had her in this gifted school since she was in kindergarten. She was in eighth grade at the time. And she goes, "You've had me in this nerd school since I've been a fetus." She goes, "So I could be enriched and inspired and challenged." She goes, "Come on, Mom. Why do you deserve any less?"
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Just turned 13. And I'm like, oh, crap. Now I've got to face my stuff. Now I have to lean in and say, what am I modeling? What am I modeling? And by the way, it's everybody has chapters in their life where settling and doing good enough is fine. It's always a question of how long do you stay there? You know, have you charged enough? And I needed that time to recharge and rebalance after so much going on. But I'd probably been there a little longer than I should have. And she was like, "Yep, nope. Come on, what are we doing?
What's next, Mom?
Yeah, and you know what? It really forced me like that. You know, I talk a lot about, it's not just that people tend to think about like what they do, what they're aspiring to, but it's the who you want to be, right? What are your values? What is that rubrics that really create the life you want to manifest? And so it really forced me to look at that again and say, what am I looking to create? Is this in alignment? And if not, and that's really was what finally got me over myself and gave me the courage to start my own company, because I knew I couldn't find it in the corporate environments that I were finding. I knew that if I was really true to what she challenged me to get centered to, that the only path forward was for me to finally bet on myself. And so, yeah, she's like, yeah, I'm just, she's going to hear this and she's going to ask for more allowance. So maybe, like, you should be paying me for that, Mom. I know what you charge your clients, so.
Yeah, well, you can remind her of the private school you've been paying for.
Exactly, and the college coming up. Exactly.
And college coming up. That's what I do with my kids when they give me a hard time. Like, okay, well, we'll trade for tuition. How's that?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I'm like, you know what? I always appreciate you don't feel bad for asking, but also don't feel bad when you get the no.
That's so funny. I've had this discussion with my sister because she is all about advocating for equity and justice. And she works for a nonprofit in the Berkeley area in California. And she has a daughter that's constantly renegotiating.
Yeah.
And she hesitates to stop it because she doesn't want her to think she can't negotiate, because women are so unlikely to negotiate on behalf of themselves. And
oh my God, you are one of my areas. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm. You know, how old is
she? She's trying not to stop her, right?
Yeah, how old is your daughter? Well, younger, she's, older?
She's six now. But when she was this, my conversation with her was when she was three, and I said to my sister, "There are some things that are non-negotiable, like you being late for work. That's non-negotiable, and she needs to know the difference between what she can negotiate and what she can't negotiate, particularly with her parents."
Right. And well, I know young, I said, like, negotiate with an acceptable options. My daughter was born very similarly. So my big thing, because they feel like they really want to have control in their environment, my big thing was, gee, do you want water with or without ice?
Yes. Give the choice right up front. And that's
right. And then like, ooh, you know, soda, not an option, with or without ice, you know? And so now every once in a while I do the similar thing. And she goes, "Oh, you're doing that water with or without ice thing, aren't you?" And I'm like,
yep, that's definitely what will happen with this girl. She is very bright. And but that's exactly the advice I gave my sister. And I said, tell her she can negotiate dessert.
Yeah.
Tell her she can negotiate her clothing out of these three pair of leggings and t-shirt. You know, you can pick whatever combination you want. Yeah. You have to do it in the next 5 minutes.
Like, right, exactly. And what are the parameters?
But I had to remind her the reason she was so hesitant to stop the negotiation. I said, you're doing this because you're concerned that as a woman, she won't know her value, won't be able to negotiate. I said, but there's a lesson here. We just started laughing. It was the best conversation.
Yeah, and listen, even in corporate, right? There are things that are, you know, up for grabs and things that aren't. Like, don't fight the windmills, fight the things that are actually in your control.
Exactly.
And, you know, one of the areas that I'm so passionate about coaching is to help women who are so sick of feeling underpaid and underappreciated and happy in their career. Because I was a comp executive for, like, you know, 20 years, and I've been on the other side of literally billions of dollars worth of comp discussions. And I've seen time and time again where women are not advocating on their behalf. And it's not that companies don't have a long way to go in many instances to at least create an even playing field. But once again, take your power back. There's so many things that I've seen that women don't do, many, obviously, as abroad, don't typically do. And, like, perfect example is there's a statistic, it's been proven a couple of times, that more times than not, most women will not put themselves forward for a promotion or a job unless they're 90% qualified based upon the job description. A man, however, 60%.
I read that somewhere. I think it was a Gallup poll.
Right. And it's been validated a few times. What's the difference? And if you think about sort of one of the things that your sister is thinking about, you know, being perfect, you know, the knower versus boy, like their ability to jump in and learn. And so in corporate speak, it's confidence in your learning agility, that you know you can. So there's the negotiation skill, it's the confidence in your learning agility, that you have the ability to be perfectly imperfect and figure it out as you go. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I know when I talk to folks, a lot of times they say, well, is it the negotiating skills that are the things that really undermine most women in the compensation negotiation? And I go, honestly, if you do all, like, what I like, consciousness-based confidence building, the negotiating is easy. It's easy because like any negotiation, you know your worth, you know what you want, and you're willing to walk away.
Right. Well, that's the next part. You're willing to walk away.
Right. I
look at it, I have three things written down when I have to go into negotiation, whether that's with Verizon to get something taken off my bill, or with my husband, or in my previous job. It was, what's best case scenario? What I really want? What is my compromise option? How far am I willing to go? What is my compromise? What's my deal breaker? And how will it play out? Because that's like when you're arguing with your kid and you have a consequence, it has to be a consequence you're willing to live with and that you can find a way to deal with. Yeah. So that totally makes sense to me.
And I love what you say there, because it takes the emotion out of it, because I find people get into these rackets about, then they start fighting of, this is what's right. This is the right number. This is the right outcome. And they're not open to really seeing what's possible. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's other ways of constructing. I've been brought into negotiations where, you know, a senior woman executive, I don't know what she was, a couple of this happened, but where they literally negotiated flat to go in for a promotion because they, well, I just got a promotion and I just got, you know, and I'm like, well, wait a second. In your current company, how long ago did they promise you that money and that promotion? Oh, 18 months ago. And I'm like, so you didn't just get the promotion. You didn't just get the money. They were delayed. But the good news is, once again, when you know how it works, there are all these different buckets that you can then play in. That we ended up, even though the cash, we got a little bit more, through all these other wants, all these other things that were possible. And that she'd only gone in and said, you know, this is a very one-dimensional way of what success looks like, I wouldn't have been able to help her. Right.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Do you write about that? Do you have articles or a book or anything?
You know what? It's funny. I've started to think, I've written about other types of things, but it's funny how sometimes, because my background was so heavy on the comp side, I didn't want that to define me, because for me, compensation has always been the back door into management consulting. Compensation is the symptom with boards and C-suite employees. And I'm certainly analytical and knowledgeable enough, but it got me at the table for a broader suite of conversations. So I think in the very beginning, I leaned a little bit away from just pigeonholing myself as the comp girl, but it's something I'm, particularly when it intersects with the coaching side, it's something I'm so passionate about. To be frank, right before COVID hit, my intention was to launch group coaching for women on this. Mm-hmm. It would have been a little tone deaf to be honest, will launch group coaching about optimizing one's compensation and career when folks were just worried about their health, their family, and keeping their job. Right. So, you know, I've got all of that there. I've got all the materials. There's stuff on my website, free resources for women, to kind of some exercises and different ways of thinking. But I was thinking about, I've got a TEDx idea. I've already got one pitch, but I've got another one that I think kind of speaks to that intersectionality of mindset and classic compensation. So more to come.
Well, I could hear it in your voice. And when we started talking about it, negotiation and compensation, you really, you lit up. I could see that it was meaningful to you. And I could hear it in your voice. So that's why I asked. So if our listeners are interested in connecting with you, I will have a blog post associated with this podcast also on my website, elkinsconsulting.com. But what are the best ways to get in touch with you? And I will have these links listed.
Sure. I mean, first and foremost, you know, there's a lot of really cool resources on my website. There's video help. There's different downloadables that I think are just of service. So my website, www.vybrante.com, that's spelled V-Y-B-R-A-N-T-E. And by the way, Vybrant, I'm not a bad speller. There's an intention behind that. All my competency, bad spelling. I'm not a great speller, but it's not bad spelling. My premise is to really unlock individual, team, and organizational vibrancy. Is you really have to understand your why, your true north, whether it's personal or in an organization. And in the end, it's all about your energy. It's like really what sets you up for success and or stress, and how do you shift it? So that's why Vybrant is spelled that way. Certainly I'm pretty good at responding within 24 hours to any and all emails. So Kerrian, K-E-R-R-I-A-N, at Vybrant. My mom is responsible for that funky spelling. it's a little different, kind of Irishy.
I like it. Yes, very Irishy. And I see that you have red hair. So
yes, fits the brands, Vybrant, certainly. And LinkedIn, you know, just my name, Kerrian Fournier, pretty active on posting and really interacting and really trying to be of service and help folks in, you know, different ways.
Well, thank you for those. I will definitely have a link so you can connect with Kerrian on LinkedIn. I'll have that on the blog post as well. Kerrian, this has been such a pleasure. I'm so grateful for Tara Bradford's introduction. She absolutely knew we would hit it off, and that's not surprising. It's the people who know me well that usually put me in touch with the people that I connect most deeply with. So, Tara, thank you if you listen to
this.
Tara,
thank you. Absolutely. She's amazing. She's, you know, look her up to everybody out there. She's an amazing professional.
Yes,
and,
I
really look forward
to
following you guys. Yeah, and continuing the conversation, because it's nice to find a part of your tribe that is looking to make the world a better place.
Ah, what a wonderful place to end. Thanks, Kerrian.
Hey, have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. If you're planning an event or company retreat and want to bring in a memorable, entertaining, and highly practical speaker as your keynote speaker or workshop facilitator, please visit us at elkinsconsulting.com to learn how we can help and provide a memorable keynote or breakout session. Thank you. I look forward to hearing from you.